हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषा कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Samyama. Patanjali uses the term samyama to describe the combined state of concentration, meditation, and samadhi. According to Patanjali, one can achieve whatever one wants to through the practice of samyama because it expands human potentials and allows one to explore higher and higher states of consciousness. Through the practice of samyama, it is said that one can develop supernatural powers or perfections called siddhis, which is described in the third chapter of the Yoga Sutras. Because the body is a miniature presentation of the cosmos, whatever exists in the cosmos is present in the body. Microcosm and macrocosm being one, an individual can thus have access to the powers of the universe. The practice of samyama upon any object brings perfection regarding that object. By practicing samyama on latent mental impressions, samskaras, for example, one can realize their content and achieve knowledge of previous births. By the practice of samyama on the navel center, one can understand one's entire physiology. By the practice of samyama on the throat center, one can eliminate hunger and thirst. By the practice of samyama on the distinction between purusha and prakriti, one can attain knowledge of Purusha, the Supreme Consciousness. Many other kinds of supernatural powers, such as enhanced powers of sight, smell, touch, taste, and the powers of minuteness, lightness, greatness, and lordship, also mentioned. One who attains these partial perfections still has to go beyond their charms and temptations to establish himself in the state of perfect samadhi. So, in other words, once you get to this point of meditation, because the whole thing is about getting to this point of samadhi, and once you get to that point, then there's all these, how you're meditating, what you're meditating on. You can use it in all these different ways. So then if you want material perfections, you can get them. Right? So the element of, since the body is just a small, basically, element like the universe, so then that connection you can do. But the whole point is one has to remember, it's just another trick how Maya keeps you in control. Right? You think I'm doing all these special things, controlling things in the universe, this and that. She just lets you do that so that you stay absorbed in the universe. Right? Of course, you have to work at it. You mean to get to this point, you have to work very hard. So you'd have to be very sincere to do it. But the point is it's just all these are just different ways to get distracted. That's why it says if you want to go perfect samadhi, then you have to go beyond all these, not worry about the perfections. Right? So you've done all this and you get up to the point, now you can get distracted by the yogic perfections. Then those who get beyond that, then they get to meditation on the super soul to the point, that point, and then they decide to merge, so they get distracted there. Right? So one is in karma, one is in jnana. Mm-hmm. Then if they keep going, then they surrender to the Lord and take up devotional service. So all that work, you could have started devotional service from yama. Right? You know, just being nice, because that's devotees are nice, right? You don't steal, because it all belongs to the Lord. It's somebody's quota. You know what I'm saying? But they'll get it after all this. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Technically, samyama is after samadhi?
No, samyama means where you're getting concentration, meditation, and samadhi. So using the samadhi, but then he has it mentions here the state of perfect samadhi means you're not distracted by something else. So it would just have to be the Lord. But the thing is these things are described. I think the Lord is described in the second chapter. This is in the third chapter. So one may take it that the Lord is described first because that's the actual important principle, and then all these other things can be considered. Or one might consider it that that's a higher thing, so therefore one gets distracted. It's you know, the idea is that the materialist is engaged, right? And so these are all the various ways that one could be engaged. Because otherwise, if there was one engagement, people would have gotten bored of that a long time ago. Right, but each engagement is so unique, and it takes actually so many, you know, hundreds or thousands or millions of lifetimes to perfect one of them to its topmost, whatever you can get, that it keeps one busy for quite a while. You know, like that, you know. Yes.
So on the path of devotional service, we also have so many distractions, but
yes,
apparently, comparing it to those, it's like very minute, it's short.
It's short. Also, we see is that the main element of distraction when you're talking about material perfections, it basically comes at the stage of nishta. So that's at the beginning of the middle.
Yeah.
While this is at the beginning of the absolute end.
Yeah.
You know. In other words, they've already basically come up to the liberated. It means maybe here is before the liberated platform. But if you get into it properly into samadhi, then you understand the difference between the Lord and the living entity perfectly. So you're actually liberated. So then if you take up devotional service, the process would be very quick. But the point is you could have already started that and made the whole process before that quicker. You know, so once you take up the process, it may appear that it takes longer. But the whole process to get to that final is quicker. Well, the other one, it's very difficult to get there, practically impossible. But if you do, and if you take up devotional service, very quickly they move forward because they're already on the Uttama platform. Right? You know, they just are on the Uttama platform without being devotees. It means they're on the liberated platform. Yeah. And so then, yeah. But the problem is that you can distract it. So that's the sixth thing in anartha. So that's where the major element is taken care of. But it seems that it goes all throughout, you know, until you get to the point of this same point of perfect samadhi, meaning that samadhi is so fixed on Krishna, you know, that purva rag, the complete attachment to Krishna is there, that then you move into being an associate. But here they're having big distractions already at this very advanced level. Well, for the devotees, it starts
earlier.
Yeah, because when you're able to perform the spiritual activities how you plan to do them, and you get result, you're successful, people appreciate that, then facility, respect, everything is there. So that's where many get distracted. You know, just like many yogis get distracted here at the city. Like some places Prabhupada talks about yogis as just mystic cities. He doesn't even talk about them coming to the point of liberation or that. You know. So it's the karmis are into your regular, you know, high quality material enjoyment. Your jnanis are into liberation. Your yogis are into cities. Because it would appear that most only get that far. You know. Is that so?
Yeah.
But for the devotee, it's earlier. So as soon as some area of his devotional service starts to work and he gets recognition for it, it's already happening. So you're already just like we're starting devotional service from Yama. So and they're waiting till the end. So those things also come earlier, like you're saying. So everything's just speeded up. So what may take them a long time, you know, 36,000 years, you can do in one lifetime. That's why the demigods are considerate, and the sages consider Kali Yuga so special. You know, we're jumping up and down. Oh, it's Kali Yuga. You can't. They're all saying, wow, Kali Yuga. You know, it's like in 100 years you can get self-realized.
Mm.
On the other ones, it takes thousands of years. Yes.
But isn't it also that as long as you're engaged in the process, then time is not really long time, short time?
That's there. But it means one has to consider 100 years or 36,000.
One definitely has to.
Yeah, yes. It means you have to be practical here.
Yeah, people are always talking about being practical.
Yeah. Yeah, being realistic. Yeah. Realistic. Yeah. Okay, is there any other questions on... So he's saying samyama means that that complete, you know, absorption. Mm-hmm. Means that what you should do, yama is what you... I guess it's getting rid of whatever.
Right?
Yes.
Mystic cities, they appear at that stage?
Seems to be, once you've come to that stage of samadhi. But before, it seems to be before complete samadhi. They had mentioned it before, that it's a distraction that comes up in the process. The state in which all questions are answered, the state in which one is established in one's true nature. So then you see things there, means the true nature, you see the true nature of how the material energy functions or how you can deal with it. But that's still, it's only real true natures that's engagement in Krishna service. Just you see the mechanics perfectly, right? Because sometimes you can't do something because you don't know the mechanics of it or don't have the concentration to actually be able to do that. But here is that you have that concentration, and so you can perfectly see the mechanics, how things in the universe function. So then you can do all kinds of amazing things. But the point is it still comes down to, is it engaged in the Lord's service or not? It doesn't matter if you're doing something really ordinary and not for Krishna, or something very amazing and not for Krishna. It's still the same amount of maya, right? You know, you're still bound up, you know. You've worked so hard that you can be amazingly in maya, right? Like that, you know. So, like that, you know. It works out. Does that make sense?
Maharaj's first stage would be sadbija samadhi with seeds.
Yeah, I would think so. That's probably why they mention it, because sadbija would mean yes, all these, and then what was it? Near bija is then without seeds. Where was that? Was that right in the beginning?
No, this is previous page.
Okay, two stages, sabija and near bija. Sabija means samadhi with seeds. The sense of individual interest separate from the supersoul is retained, right? So that would definitely be mystic cities. And the seeds of desire and attachment still remain in latent form. State of near bija, seedless samadhi, however, the individual consciousness is completely united with the supreme soul. This may be understood in two ways. The yogi surrender, so that means the sabija would be these cities and all those kind of things. Then the near bija would be going beyond that, but then there's two levels of near bija. It can mean merging into the Lord or keeping that separate existence and surrendering to the Lord. This may be understood. If the yogi surrenders all separate interests and serves only the interests of the Paramatma and becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, by the Lord's mercy, gains entry into the eternal spiritual realm, Vaikuntha. But if the yogi identifies with the Paramatma as his own self, he's absorbed in the body of the Lord. This is called Ishwara Sayuja, merging into the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The first is the devotional union, the second is non-devotional. Okay. So you can get all those three within samadhi. So then the two levels of samadhi, you know, one's lower, just definitely lower, and the others are higher, but of the other two, then one's actually perfect, and the others, you know, still temporary.
So as a conclusion, the yoga system only allows it to surrender the very last...
Yes, that's why we say, means one wants to be a yogi. Krishna's saying, always be a yogi. It means connecting to the Lord, but here they're perfecting all the mechanics until you finally get. It's just like spending all day to set up for the puja and all that, and then finally at 9 o'clock at night, then you sit down and do a little bit of puja or something, right? Yeah, just like that. So the whole thing is that the devotional process from the very beginning, when you actually have faith and take up the process of yama. And niyama, you're already engaged in devotional service, right? And at the same time, is that connection to the Lord is what they haven't done. They know that they're trying to get to there, but that's only when they get to this near bija samadhi. So that means this very advanced state. So we're able to already do devotional service in the neophyte stage. Well, they don't have devotional service until the uttama stage.
And this is why it's such hard work.
Yeah, I mean, Arjuna, we see how means Arjuna is the only one out of thousands of students and basically anybody on the planet that when he stands and has his bow drawn, he only sees exactly where he's going to hit the target. He doesn't see anything else. So that means his concentration is good. If anybody could do it, he could. And he says, forget it. Right, you know. So it's just, it becomes a general reality in Satyayuga, right? One, you have 100,000 years to live. So if you spend 10,000, 36,000, or 60,000 years, okay, you still got, 40,000 left, And so then it works.
It's like you're in Vanaprastha at 60, right?
Yes.
Is it because of bodily attachment that you get attracted to this specific process?
It means the whole yoga process?
Yeah, it seems like
a strong. Because it uses the body a lot. Yeah. It's all based on the body. So for someone who's more bodily conscious, then it's there. So the bhakti yoga is a higher conscious because devotees know they're not. And they try their best to act. Sometimes it works out really good. Sometimes it doesn't work out as good.
But at least.
But point is they're still working on a more advanced platform. Mechanically, these other yogis are doing amazing stuff. But that's not the yogis you have today. Because even the guys up in Rishikesh, Hardwar, they're not doing this, right? They're peaceful. They're nice like that. But they were from peaceful, nice backgrounds. They're probably from Brahmin families. If you check. Shivananda's a Brahmin family. Most of the Brahmin families, they grew up nice, so they had some samskar. So it's all they're doing is maintaining it, not letting it kind of go. Like that. So they'll be a little peaceful, a little this, a little that. But, you see, there's still that material element. They're up there. Like that was one of the things, save the Ganga and clean up. And they're presenting it from an eco-friendly, they're the only ashram and Hrishikesh that's doing this eco-friendly kind of thing. And they have all these different personalities, politicians and celebrities and all that, come to their program and everything like that. So the thing is, I'm wondering all day why it wasn't sitting properly at the end over there instead of down here. So, but you can see that there's nice posters and all this and that, but it's still mundane, very sattvic, very nice. It's a great thing, every week they go and clean up around Hrishikesh. Like that, I think they got one time brought, Hindus from all over, tens of thousands or something ridiculous. And like 60,000 people just went around and just cleaned up Hrishikesh. Nice, it's a good thing. But then that's the goal, and it's just very sattvic, mundane. So that's the point, is that even though they're so, they're not engaged in this, they're not engaged in samadhi, because they're doing philanthropic work. So that means they've already dropped down from that kind of pursuit. Maybe when they were younger, they had that fire and that drive, but then they dropped down. Rajneesh was a yogi also. a really serious yogi. Yeah, but then it didn't quite work out so good for him. So, he went for mystic siddhis, after that,
The group of Sai Baba also is engaged in philanthropic work.
Yeah. No, they all do. They all do. Remember the I don't know, I think now he is the Shankaracharya, either that or now he's dead, I'm not sure, like that. But before, when the big Shankaracharya was there, this Chandrasekhar, back in like the 80s, 90s, I think it was in the, it may have been 80s, yeah, I think it was in the 80s, his junior, then just one day freaked out and disappeared. No one knew what happened to him. And then a couple of weeks later, he turned up in some village somewhere, and now he, he'd gone into, the PR is that, he went into, meditation and this and that, decided, we have to do something for the world, and then he started this whole welfare foundation. Basically he just had a nervous breakdown, and so then he just, like that, And so then this is the only way he can kind of keep himself busy and not freak out. Just sitting all day studying Vedanta, and all that. He couldn't handle it. Not like the old guy. You know? So I don't know if he's still in the seat or if he's dead. But that was the one thing. He was, I think that was, yeah, couldn't, shouldn't be dead. I think he was 40 at the time. Yeah, he may still be alive. Does that make sense? So even the Shankarites, the Buddhists, everybody, all they do is welfare work, which is a nice thing. Welfare work's not bad, but to say that that's the goal or to consider that that itself is spiritual, no, that's something you do on the side. You know what I'm saying? Like you're cooking. Cooking is preparing the preparation, but it's proper to, you know, keep everything clean, do everything nice, behave nicely with everybody. But just because you're cleaning the kitchen, behaving nice, doesn't mean you're cooking. So that's the thing, is they made the mistake, think that if they, welfare work means it's spiritual. That's the problem. So they all fall down to that. Because there is no taste in these other. So, yes.
Do any yogis still exist? I read Radhanath Maharaj's sort of biography. I remember he'd speak about some, but actually very few that he met that could had mystic cities.
There are.
And I realized I had some doubt of when I first read it. I was like, and then I had to, you know. I almost was disbelieving about it.
No, they probably talked about him. I know when they were at the Kumbh Mela in 77, the Mahakumbha, when Prabhupada would walk around with the sannyasis and that, I think at one point he pointed out some boys. And he says, they're you know, 300-400 years old. Like that. You know, they look like they're, you know, in their teens. But they would have started yoga young and they just stayed that way. Because they just stop the breath. The point is you live as long as how many breaths you have. So if you stop the breathing for, you know, whatever months or years at a time, you just don't get older, you know. So.
Does that mean exercise is bad?
Exercise is bad.
Well, the thing is, if you don't exercise, then you get frail, and then you take a lot of real short breaths. So anyway... Yeah, in any way, you know, the point is you're going to die. It means you don't, in other words, death is certain, right? You know, there's a saying, the only thing you can count on is death and taxes. Right? Those aren't going away, right? Yeah, so it's just a matter of you do what's your duty, then that's proper. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, for us, the yoga inside bhakti, is that elements of remembrance, Vishnu Smarana, and...
It's all of them. We do all of them.
No, I mean, just taking this specific part, when we isolate all this... We do the yoga.
No, we do everything. It means all eight, or we're doing, but it has a natural place. It's not so mechanical and not so focused just on that part. See, because here's yama... And niyama, you're just focusing on being a good person, and that's all. And then you're properly situated as a good person, so you're in a mode of goodness. So there, if you can sit down and do asana, because you need many hours to do asanas. You know, it's not like you look in these yoga books. You know, they start you off on 20-minute regimes. You look at in the back, you know, because you're nice. You went, hey, okay. So what's it? You know, you get to the back, it's 2.5-3 hours at a sitting, and they'll do that twice a day. You know, so basically is you're getting up in the morning, you're doing whatever your sadhana is, taking your bath, this and that, you have to clean the ashram, you have to cook, you have to eat, you have to wash your clothes, you know, you have to do whatever else, collect firewood, this and that. So all your remaining time is spent doing yoga. Yes.
Pralada, when the Swami said before he mentioned the release, he was doing 8 hours a day of bhakti yoga.
Okay, that makes sense. Now I understand how you just sit there. Anytime you get the thing, you can just sit there and, you know, it's like, I think we were in Bombay at the what do you call it? The Bhaktivedanta Hospital. There? Uh-huh. That is called a.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sahotra Maharaj was getting Panchakarma. And since I was there with him just to keep him company. But then at one point, he got a separate room because of something they had to do. Like that. So I was, then Paladananda Maharaj moved into my room. And then it's just like any time, you know, you be doing something, you turn around and look, and he's doing a headstand or something. You know, it's like, it's just, he's very good at, very focused on doing the yoga. So that makes sense. He was doing before. Okay. Yeah, so 8 hours a day, you know, standard occupation, so. You know, yeah.
All these definitions that we're going through here, are they also part of Vedanta, or are some of them unique? Like which one?
It means generally is everything's part of Vedanta. It's just that the sage that describes it in the context of that particular subject matter.
Mm.
So it may have some standard terms it uses, or he may establish particular terms for it. But because those particular terms apply to that particular aspect perfectly, then generally anybody else, when they're using terminology in connection with that specific area, they always use the terminology of that sage. Mm. So when we talk about yoga, we'll use the same terms. Like we say samadhi, dhyan, yama, niyama, we say the same thing.
Similar with the major, yeah, middle terms.
Yeah, all these things. Everything's there because they've taken it to its fullest.
Yeah.
But the principle that it's based on is always Vedanta. It's just whether it's presented in connection with Vedanta or it's presented as its own entity.
So we can use these things.
It means all this is used. The point is it doesn't become overly prominent.
It's just a tool for.
Yes, because it's just like you're cooking. You use a pot, but if you're totally into pots and look at pots all day and carry one around in your bag, you know, stuff like that, there's something weird, you know? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. Or, you know, you got a cauliflower in your bag. You know, just in case, you know?
You got a cauliflower in your bag.
Yeah. You know, so like that. So, yeah. So the whole point is there's a balance, there's a natural balance, so everything has its place and how much it's supposed to be there. So in bhakti, it's nicely balanced. So that's the thing. The someone on the platform of prema, they're perfectly balanced. So in that context, you can say the person on the platform of prema, they're normal. Everybody else has issues. Like that. So the more advanced, the less the issues. Right, but we're taking it as, you know, being weird is normal, and prema, that's something, you know. No, prema is normal for the jiva, the normal position for interaction with the Lord, right? So that's what we're trying to get to.
Just like we think this is a normal place in the spiritual world,
yeah.
Some kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that you have the regular world, and then you have the insane asylum,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So this is the insane asylum. It's just very big. You know, this has different levels of accommodation, right? You know, that's all.
No matter, rephrasing my question, then it would be like, we do everything, all the eight stages, but what's prominent is that meditation?
No, because, I mean, it's the meditation on the Lord, that absorption, but it doesn't mean that one's not using activity and knowledge. So, but the point is that the pure devotee is always absorbed in the Lord. Yes, you could say that aspect is the more advanced aspect. That's why then the yoga is described, the dhyan is described the last of the karma in dhyan. The dhyan is the last. Because that absorption in the Lord is the best. Because even if you have great knowledge of the Lord, that's not what's so important in the relationship. And just because you're very active, it's still that you're remembering Krishna. So that point of always remembering Krishna, then that's, yes, you could say that's the most essential element. Like that. Just like that's the prominent element for them. So that's yoga, is that meditating on the Supreme. But it's just, they do it mechanically and we do it basically naturally. Right? Because it's a relationship, an interaction relationship. Well, they basically stop that kind of interaction, mechanically go through it till they get to that through meditation. And then they'll take up the actual physical.
Okay.
Is that okay?
So from the jhana process, we take all this study, the origin from the karma, all all the services. I was just trying to make it.
Yes, yes. From yoga, we'd use these terminologies and these kind of things. So like we will talk about your devotional service, sabija, nirbija, but we'll call it, you know, sakam and nishkam. You know, like that. You know, so it's the same kind of principle. But they just use it at that level because they're only meditating at that level. While we're meditating from the beginning, maybe not so good. So the whole process of samadhi, the levels, that those lower levels are stretched all the way down to shraddha. Right? So that one is occasionally thinking about the Lord or more regularly thinking about the Lord or like that. Well, they just deal with it at that more advanced stage. Does that make sense?
You really get to appreciate bhakti when you learn about these things.
Yeah, no, that's the whole idea. Is you see actually that this is very clear. How everything fits in, it's not a bewilderment and all that. You know? And so that's the idea. Because one shouldn't get distracted by these other philosophies, because that's what causes distraction. Yeah. So therefore, we're learning about them in the context of devotional service. So then it works very nicely.
There's a verse in the Gita, I think 250, which says that Bhakti Yoga is the perfection of work.
Yes.
But then it has everything in it.
Yes. Yes. Because you always engage the senses in the Lord's service, so that's karma. Right, the knowledge of doing that is the knowledge of detachment, that's the gyan. Right? And so, but the point is you're practiced at that, so you're doing that and thinking of Krishna. So naturally you're using the knowledge, but the focus is not on the knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah. So anything else on yoga before we go into karma mimamsa? Something more down to earth,
yeah,
right?
Good.
You know, good old fruit of activities,
yeah.
Right? Right? All this jnana, all this meditation.
Yeah.
Finally, now we get down to karma, right? You know, okay. The word karma, okay. Karma mimamsa, elevation through the performance of duty, right? So now for us, it was karma yoga. So we'll use our duties to elevate ourselves by engaging everything in Krishna's service. But in here, the idea is that serving God's not important. God takes care of, you know, fulfilling your desires. So if you perfectly work, you can elevate yourself in your material position until you're always engaged in pious activities and always getting the results of pious activities. Because impious activities are the cause of, how you say?
Impious.
Yeah, it means misery.
Yeah.
So, therefore, if you're only getting pious results, you'll always be happy, right? The problem is the material world's not meant for being here, so Maya's not going to allow it to work perfectly, because you'll always, due to material qualification or disqualification, you'll do something that's wrong. So you're always going to be getting. There's no such thing as material perfection. It doesn't exist. Spiritual perfection, yes, but not material perfection. So then it's the mechanics on one level are the same, though the detail is different. Like, in other words, the principles that we're going through in the yoga system are the same in bhakti, though the mechanics they use are you know, the detail is different. So same in karma mimamsa. It's a process of engaging yourself and seeing that you're properly situated. But they'll do it simply for the fruit of benefit. So then they're going to engage themselves in yajnas and karmas that are going to give the fruit of result they want. Does that make sense? Yes.
In the beginning we said that the process is that getting higher.
Yes.
How can karma...
You explained it. He explained it once. You remember what you explained?
Not
really. You don't really. That's a problem. Okay, so basically is that you're taking into here more serious... Oh, I think that was it. Means the first four are only taking aspects of the Veda that supports their philosophy. So their philosophy is supported by the Veda, but they're very choosy about... Means, in other words, verses that don't support what they're doing, they don't deal with those. They only deal with ones that seemingly deal with what they're doing. But Karma Mimamsa accepts all the verses. right? Because they're using all the verses and the yajna and all that. So that's the position that makes it higher. That's why karma mimamsa, as a philosophy, can defeat the other four. Simply because they deal with a wider range of verses that Vedic evidence that the others don't deal with. So anything that contradicts their philosophy, they don't deal with. But karma, mimamsa, deals with everything. Problem is their interpretation is only up to the level of fruitive activities. So that's why the Vedanta can defeat that, because it's dealing with all the Vedic literature, but from the platform of getting out of the world. So therefore, it can defeat that. And then the Vaishnava Vedanta can always defeat the non-Vaishnava Vedanta. So it's a matter of authority. It accepts more of the Vedic authority, right? Right? But otherwise, as a position, karma means, you could say, because yoga is also karma, and those first three, they were jnana, right? So generally, jnana is higher because you're liberated. But the principle is for the living entity, it's more natural to be engaged in activities.
Yeah.
You know, so these ones work. But at the same time, as Vedanta is where that proper balance of non-material activities with non-material knowledge, while these others are basically, it's kind of quasi-spiritual, you know, it's not quite, yes.
Mars, the speakers of the philosophies, the ones that are more successful, they're more closer to what the Lord's desire is, and they get empowered more with the chit potency?
I would say is we're not dealing with any chit potency up to now. It's just that they themselves, this is the area where they specialize in. Because, in other words, people are materialistic, so they have this variety of interests. And so these sages then make methods by which you can still keep yourself connected to the Veda. And at the same time fulfill all your material, you know, kind of interest. Does that make sense? Material, we're meaning being within material consciousness. You know, we're not meaning material here, meaning karmic, and then liberation is beyond. We're including liberation in that material conception. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. The word karma refers to any action that results in a reaction, whether it be good or bad. Right? Means you perform an activity, it gives a result. Whatever it is, that process is called karma. The word mimamsa means to analyze and understand thoroughly. Right? The philosophical system of karma, mimamsa, and Vedanta are closely written. Okay, so that means you're analyzing karma. Right? So mimamsa means the analyzation. Right? Means how you interpret, like that. I think English they call it hermeneutics. Like that. It means how you're going to interpret, how you analyze the particular verse. Like that, yes.
So this is completely materialistic.
Completely. Just like all the other ones.
No, but they have like kind of a concept of liberation and this and that.
Well, here he is.
This is just about karma.
It's about karma, but there's a kind of a simplistic idea of God and stuff like that, but it's still, we're the center of the whole process. They don't go into actually understand the personality of Godhead relationship with them like the other ones don't. Like that. But this is on the level of karma, but it's good work. There's no such thing as anything impious. The other ones, you give up even your normal social good work if you want to actually, you know, get the results of them. But you could apply them in your life and be a better person. You know, you could analyze that, okay, a good activity is better than a bad one. You know, since you're going to situate yourself socially. So even by Nyaya or these others, you could properly do. But it's more that you're detached from material results, that therefore you're nice, so you fit in the society. Well, here, it means you're specifically trying to be nice. Because unless you're nice, you don't get a good result. You know? Is that okay? So here you have etiquette and all kinds of things that aren't really included in the other systems. So it's more broad, and it's the thing is it has all the material elements fully taken care of. But problem is you know, it doesn't have spiritual. I think, I'm not sure, that's not talked about in the Bhagavatam. Daksha, I think, is karma mimamsa. He's in karma mimamsa. He's like perfect materialist. Like, you know, that's what daksha means, expert. So he's expert on this whole social system. What we see is the yogis, they become more expert at material things, but it's more from the mystical, you know, from that intellectually understanding how it functions and everything like that. Well, here it's because basically these others you have to be more renounced, but here it's that, you know, it's more focused on grihasthas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also very interesting that Krishna, he chose this particular philosophy to convince Nanda Baba to do the Govardhan Puja.
Yes. Yeah. Because it defeats the ones before it.
Yeah. The previous ones.
Yeah. So, in other words, Nyaya is used, but then when there's a weakness in that, then you use these other systems to defeat that. You know, yoga will defeat the first three, but Karma Mimamsa will defeat the others. So depending upon which argument is there, then each one has their strength in defining it. You know, just like Nyaya and Vaisheshika had some really good arguments to prove God exists. You know, and you don't need scriptures, you don't need any faith, it's just logical that it has to be. Like that. So, you know, if you're dealing on that level, then they work very nicely. You know. So the means each one has its strength, but then this one deals with the Moshastra. But it's only dealing, its emphasis is only on the Samhita and the Brahmanas, while Vedanta is on the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. So that's why it gets more down to the philosophical, more essential. So then you can take it deeper. So even though he goes deeply into this, analyzes nicely, the Vedanta will analyze more. So you get farther. So, looks like okay. The philosophical systems of Karma Mimamsa and Vedanta are closely related to each other, are in some ways complementary. Karma Mimamsa may be understood as a stepping stone to Vedanta, right? Because it's the first part of the Veda. It examines the teachings of the Veda in the light of karmakanda rituals, whereas Vedanta examines the same teachings in the light of transcendental knowledge. The Karma Mimamsa system is called Purva Mimamsa, which means the earlier study of the Veda, and Vedanta is called Uttara Mimamsa, which means the latter study of the Veda. Karma Mimamsa is to be taken up by householders, and Vedanta is reserved for wise men who have graduated from household life and taken up the renounced order. So that would be the normal system, right? So that's what's so unique about devotional service, is that everybody is actually working with the Uttara Mimamsa, you know? So no matter what situation they're in and no matter how advanced they are, right?
But then why is it said here that Vedanta is like for people who have graduated? What does it say?
Graduated.
If everybody within bhakti, and Vedanta is bhakti, right?
Because also the point is the household will be more focusing on the karma yoga aspect, mm-hmm. while the sannyasa will be more on the jnana yoga aspect. You know, it just means what techniques you're using. It would be natural within the devotion. It means the whole thing parallels. Mm. But we're talking the Vedic system, they would go through like this, and as a householder they would do all the rituals, then they would stop that, and then they would take up study, and then, austerity, and then knowledge. But the point is everybody, if you do the work for Krishna, everybody's already sannyas.
Mm.
So then you could say from there, yes, it's for those who are sannyas. So every devotee who functions on nice karma is sannyas, so therefore it's for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also in devotional service by applying the Uttara Mimamsa, you already go is fixed from the beginning, right?
Yes, it's properly fixed. You know, in other words, this is within the material realm, you're fixing it very high. But then there's beyond that. Right. Like that.
Prabhupada praised the taxi driver sannyas in the early days. You know, that Prabhu gave his paycheck to the Prabhupada, drove the taxi, and he chanted all day.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Who's Janus?
Jayananda, okay. Yeah. Yeah, because in the beginning he didn't have book distribution or other things to make money, so devotees just had jobs. Mm-hmm. Like that.
He said he was sannyasi.
Yeah. Yeah, because it wasn't his money that he was given. He was driving the taxi to get money. It was called Ipra Krishna. Like that. I think it was also in, I think, Boulder. The devotees there, because there's a big university, I think, in Boulder. Right? There's two cities right next to each other. Boulder, and I can't remember the other one, or whatever. Then that has a big university, so the devotees would, you know, do everything in the day, and then at night they would go and clean the university. And get paid for that. That's how they take care of the temple. Mm-hmm. But, so that's the sannyas. The main goal of the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is to provide a practical methodology for the utilization of the Vedic religion, Dharma, for the satisfaction of the urges for wealth, artha, and sensual pleasure, Kama. Right? So Dharma, artha, and Kama. That's its main focus, not moksha. Mm-hmm. In so doing, Karma Mimamsa provides a materialistic explanation of the Vedic rituals for persons whose material desires have blinded them to spiritual understanding. Okay, footnote 18. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:42-43, the Lord says, "Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say there is nothing more than this." Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. "People in general are not very intelligent, and due to their ignorance, they are most attached to the fruit of activities recommended in the Karmakanda portions of the Vedas. They do not want anything more than sense gratificatory proposals for enjoying life in heaven, for wine and women are available and material opulence is very common. In the Vedas, many sacrifices are recommended for elevation to the heavenly planets, especially the Jyotistoma sacrifices. In fact, it is stated that anyone desiring elevation to heavenly planets must perform these sacrifices, and men with a poor fund of knowledge think that this is the whole purpose of Vedic wisdom. It is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. As fools are attached to the flowers of poisonous trees without knowing the results of such attractions, unenlightened men are similarly attracted by such heavenly opulence and the sense enjoyment thereof." Right? So he says inexperienced, because even you get there, you're still not satisfied. Right? Indra is so much in anxiety. Right? How many times does Indra have to worry about some sage? So we just hurry about the point when he actually does something. Right? But how long has he been thinking about it before he did it? Right? So he's sitting on his throne, the apsaras are there dancing and singing and everything, but he's worried about the sage. Right? So therefore someone without experience thinks, "I will be materially happy." But it doesn't work like that. There's always more, right? When all when we get into the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he's on the heavenly planets, then when the sages come down from Satyaloka, you know, Maharjanatapa and Satyaloka, then the demigods on Indra's place, because that's the highest of all the places for sense gratification. They're jealous of them because they have greater powers. They can just go up when they live up there. Right? They have much greater mystic powers, this and that. So Indra's the king of the universe in that he manages the universe, but these people on Satyaloka are totally independent from him. Absolutely totally independent. They can function without him. In fact, when the destruction comes, it'll destroy up to Indra's place and destroy that. And they'll be fine. Right? But at the same time, as they come and take part in the universal things, they sit in the court and do different duties and everything like that. But they're totally independent, so they get actually jealous of that. Yes?
When Indra's life is finished, he goes down?
Yeah, just means he's sitting there in all his glory, and then he notices his garland fades. right? And then there's, you know, all the music and everything's playing, and they usher in a new guy, effulgent, his nice garland, you know, so just, you know, that's it. You know, it's kind of like when, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, which president was talking about it, you know, when they come to the inauguration of the new president, they're still the president. They make the speech and everything like that. But then the moment that they turn it over, all those guys that were his bodyguards are not his bodyguards anymore. Now they're the new guy's bodyguards. And then you just fade back, and everybody's clapping and listening to the new guy. And for a certain, you know, time there, no one even recognizes you exist. You're just one of the guys on the side, like everybody else. And he says it's such a strange feeling to go from being, you know, the most powerful person in that assembly to just being another person in the assembly. You know? Like that. He says, and it happens just in a moment. It's just like that. As soon as they say, okay, here, and now we turn it over to, that's it. Done. You know, so it's like that.
Maybe you have to keep the pan on.
Keep the pen. Maybe. Yeah, get a little flag. Yeah.
Maybe they take.
Yeah. Go to the forest.
Yeah. Turns around. Excuse me, sir. The pen.
Sorry.
Okay, so here's the point, is that they have faith in the Veda. They're fixed in the Veda. But the problem is they have faith in it being interpreted on the material platform. So therefore, all the verses of the Veda to them mean sense gratification, right? Rather than opportunities for spiritual elevation. That's the thing. Yeah.
So we can say that the demigods, they are cardinal service.
That level, that particular level, yeah, you could say. But no, but they know the Supreme Lord, so they're better than Karma Mimamsa. You know what I'm saying? But they're following Karma Kanda, you could say. They're following the Karma Kanda. That they're doing. That's how they got there. That's, you know, they have to be nice and everything. Like Yayati, he was proud. So even though he had amazing austerities that would allow him, you know, even though he's not living there, he could go to Brahmaloka and these kinds. He was very pious. But then when Indra asked him about his piety, then he pointed out there's no one as pious. So then for that pride, even though maybe no one else was, but still you don't say those things. You know, that's not the proper thing. So then Indra, you know, threw him out, and so then he came down to the earth. You know, so that was the position. So, you know.
So we can say Indra is not as proud.
Means he's the controlled amount of proud that he's allowed. You know, like that. So if it's a beyond that, then that's not cultured. You know, like that. Okay. In the Veda, numerous gods and goddesses are invoked. The Karma Mimamsa system interprets these deities and their worship in terms of a highly human-centered rather than God-centered rationale. Right? So that's the main difficulty. It means the mechanics, are, in one sense, technically are correct how it works, but the problem is they make it human-centered rather than God-centered. Right? You know, it's God's arrangement that the on earth you do the yajnas and that, and then that maintains the universe. But it's not that therefore you're the control of the universe. No, others are control of the universe. This is what you're supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like how you say, you know, the mechanic fixes the car. He knows everything about it and make it all work, but that doesn't mean it's his car and he's in control of the car. Right, so just because the human beings do the yajnas that nourish the universe doesn't mean that now they're in control of the universe. Right? So that's the mistake that comes up. The Karma Mimamsa system also discusses the science of sound and the science of mantra, But the major concern of this system is to combine the self-discipline established by the yoga system discussed previously with the ritualistic portion of the Vedas. So the discussion of the science of sound, though the technical points of it are correct, but their application is only how to get the material benefits from that sound. But actually how sound functions and all that is correct. Right, so that's a thing, we'll see if it gets into that here. Get into this sound? Yeah, so very interesting things, just how sound works, you know. Okay, so now major self-discipline that you have in the yoga system, because you have yama, niyama, you know, controlling everything and doing situating yourself properly, they do also. But it's for the purpose of karmakanda. They're not trying to give up the karmakanda and come to the jnanakanda element or the meditation. They just are how to make perfect karmakanda. And the aim of all this is to situate the selfish and skeptical human being in a mode of dutiful subordination to the Vedic injunctions in order to prepare him for further advancement as taught in the Vedanta system. Right? Does that make sense? So it molds him so that he'll actually, after a whole lifetime of this, ideally he'll be able to take up the Vedanta. But, you know, whether that actually happens, that's another thing. But, you know, that's what's supposed to happen. Therefore, Kama Mimamsa presents the Vedic religion as a science of mechanistic principles, and not as a faith of adoration of divinities aimed at receiving benedictions from on high. Right, this mechanistic element means mechanics are there, but when everything's about the mechanics, then we'll say it's mechanistic. Like if we're looking at the universe, how it works and interacts and all this and that, and that's all we're looking at, that's a mechanistic approach. It's not actually devotional. That makes sense? The point is because of the Lord and these different things, therefore all these things, why have the different planetary systems? Why have all these things? So there's the whole variety of action and reaction that the living entities can find all the... I mean, in other words, you have three modes of nature. So now there's 8,400,000 ways to taste those three modes. So that's what's going on. But generally in the approach to the universe and its structure, that's not being discussed. They're just showing that, okay, this planet's here and that one's there and this one moves like that and that one like that, and that's all that's being discussed. That's where it ends. Okay, God created it, but that's mechanistic. So karma mimamsa is just, you do the rituals right, you get the result. That's it. So it's mechanics. It's not a matter of faith. It's not a matter of benedictions coming from the Lord. Nothing. It's just, I do the work, I get the result. I put the coin in the machine, I get the goods from the machine. That's the way it works.
So similarly, if you're attached to Ayurveda or...
Yeah, because you can turn all of it into mechanistic. You can mechanize all of these. That's the whole point, is that's the idea, is that the devotional means you're not distracted by the mechanistic. You use it and you're good at it. But it's not that's the whole point. When that becomes the whole lifestyle, all you ever talk about is that, or all you ever talk about is the food or this or that. You can't do anything without talking about that. That's mechanistic, because that's not what it's for. It's part of, health is part of life. It's not life. Right? That's it. Yeah.
So, as you mentioned before, every new section of the Bhagavatam brings out the mechanics of the universe. But the reason is just to point out it comes from the Lord. Right?
Yeah, it's pointing from the Lord, but also to show, especially there, the Puran is showing how from the spiritual platform is transforming into the material. So if you reverse that, you get out.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So you explain how each one turns into the left, but what's the cause of it? That's what I'm saying. It's not so mechanistic, because you're explaining the cause and the reason. What are the modes? What are the different things? But if you're just saying the planet goes around like this, then that's mechanistic. It does go around like that. But why? What's the reason? What's the benefit of knowing that? You know, what do you get? What do you know? But if you know that from the mode of goodness, the mind came. So what does that mean? Now I know if I live a lifestyle of goodness, the mind will be more peaceful because it's natural position. And then from goodness to get to pure goodness, that'll be easier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if I know that the planet moves like this and it goes into retrograde, like, what does it do for me? You understand? So unless you know more about it, you know what I'm saying? Then it's not, you know the people involved, you know the different things like that. You know, it's like we were saying, it's like, what was it? I think the moon and, who is it? Moon and Mars? I think the moon and Mars. No, moon and Mercury. One of them don't get along at all. Because, but the one of the other's father. But he doesn't get along because the problem was is the person who's his father is not the husband of his mother. So he finds that annoying, you know, why that situation is there. Right? So he's been brought up by his mother and the mother's husband. But the mother's husband's not his father. Someone else is his father. So why is that like that? So they don't get along. So whenever they're in the same house, what happens when, let's say, you're walking along and with your friends and you're talking and chatting and all that, and then you come into the situation, you see people that you don't like, what happens? You just start talking and just like that. That's what the planets do. That's why it says, if it's in this house, this planet's lord of that house. So if it's his house, so if that planet comes in and they're good friends, you're comfortable. But if you come in and you're not friends, you're not comfortable. That's why everything goes down. You understand? But we're just seeing mechanism. Oh, he's in this house, so then you don't get money, you don't get this, you don't get that. That's because when you're in that guy's house, you don't spend money. You don't do anything with money. You don't talk about money. You know? It's just the way, you understand? So it's a different thing. Then you understand the personal. Otherwise, the other is just mechanics. It's just math. You know, it's not just a natural part of life. It doesn't have a balance. So that's why the study should be properly. Like you see, when we're learning about it, we're hearing the story that the sun god is there, the moon god is there, and Rahu's there. Right? So it's people, right? And then when they're giving out the nectar, then they notice, hey, he's a demon. Right? And so then you know, he gets his head cut off. But he's tasted the nectar, so therefore the head and the body don't die. But they're not exactly connected. Right? And so then, therefore, Rahu is not overly friendly towards the sun and the moon. Right? So we're learning about all these planets as people. Right? You know, Shani, Saturn, who moved before, what was his name? The son of Ravana.
Indrajit
was born. Because otherwise he had them all in the perfect place that Indrajit will be indefeatable. So understanding this, then at the last moment, then Saturn moved so that it was inauspicious. So even though all this is there, he still had a great weakness. Right? And so then Ravana was not very pleased with him, right? So he cut off his legs. So that's why he moves very slow. He's the slowest of the planet. So you know these things so the Puranas work on that level, so it's not mechanistic, right? It'll tell the position of things so that you know.
So rather mechanistic, it's the mechanics, which is used to learn that the Lord is the origin, the relationship is the important element.
Yeah, the relationship and how to use it in the Lord's service. Then it's not mechanistic. You know, there's mechanics, but it's not mechanistic.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanistic means simply you follow the mechanics, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other is that you follow the mechanic. In devotion, we understand, you follow the mechanics, but it's still up to the Lord. He's independent whether you get blessed or not. Because so many people do materially perfect, but don't get a good result, or don't get the blessings of the Lord. Well, someone else may not do. You have that Brahmin who's sitting there, he can't read, he's got the book upside down, all the other Brahmins are laughing, Lord Chaitanya's impressed. Right? You understand? The smartest weren't impressed, God's impressed, right? You know, so that's the whole thing. That's what's left out of this system. Generally most of them, but especially out of here.
So would you say as devotees, we also have the risk of getting to this?
Yes, very much. That's what I'm saying. It means human-centered, God-centered. Grihastha, Grihamedi. Grihamedi means it's centered around the house. Grihamedi. Medi, that stick that's out here? Sometimes there's a stick out here,
yeah,
like that. That's a medhi. Because then you tie the animal to it and it goes around and around, right? Or you saw when they were doing the sugar cane and stuff like,
yeah,
that? So that thing in the middle, that's the medhi. And then the bulls that go around and around and around. So the medhi means that thing in the center that holds something that when you're making it go around. So griha medhi means the house is the center. Right? And then you add God to it. You know, you have the temple and you go to the temple whenever you can and like this. But the main thing is your house. That's a griha medhi. Right? A grihasta means God's the center of the house and everything in the house goes around God. Right? Does that make sense? So technically, but a griha medhi is actually means, griha medhi is also can mean, just like you say, materialist. It can mean either a very pious person or an impious person. So griha medhi can also mean a very pious person or an impious person. But we'll generally always take it to mean impious. Griha medhi is, you know, disgusting, terrible, you know, scum of the earth grihastas, right? Like that. But actually, just it's just someone who's not, God's not the main center. Right. So that's all. So you could have God's not involved at all, it's just the house, or God's involved. So the more he's involved, the more it becomes purified and proper. But so one has to be careful of that one is a grihasta, not a grihamedi. You know, it can be, you know, today in the evening is a good program, you're a grihasta, and you go to bed when you wake up in the morning, you're a grihamedi, right? You know, it's like that. You know, it's just like, you know. Like that, you know, and then, you know, after, by the time you've taken your bath and had breakfast, then, you know, grihasta's starting to come out again, you know, like that. And does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is the principles of it will be, you'll have there. But because someone's a devotee, then these are minor elements. But because we focus and make the minor elements more important than they are, that's why they have so much effect on us. I'm saying the material nature bothers us so much simply because we value it. Right? Sukadev couldn't care less what's going on there. So there's nothing of value here. You know, specific other than it's all Brahman. So it's all equally the same of value. Just, you know, there's no interaction, there's no nothing. It just exists. But we value it separately, therefore, is the problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Therefore, Kama Mimamsa presents the Vedic religion as a science of mechanistic principles and not as a faith of adoration of divinities aimed at receiving benedictions from on high. The Vedic Dharma is justified to materialists as being, quote, useful to humanity, unquote, in that it can satisfy human worldly desires in this life and in the next when properly executed. Any proper execution of Vedic Dharma requires karma yoga, or selfless adherence to duty. All of it means even you're doing karma, activities of karma, if you want a proper result, to be pious, it's got to be karma yoga, selfless adherence to duty. Right? There must be that element of naishkarmya there. The greater it is, the better. Right? You know, you have that story of that mongoose. The mongoose is half gold. So this king did this huge yagya and big, and everyone's talking about how great it is. And then at some point, this mongoose walks in, and he's half gold and half normal mongoose. So everyone notices. And he rolls on the ground at the place of the sacrifice, and he gets up, looks at himself. And then they're all saying, then he looks at them and says, no, it wasn't that great. He says, what do you mean? We did this and that and this and that. And I'll tell you what's great. He says, you know, you understand why one side is gold and one side is not? He says, this one simple Brahmin, he did something, but the faith and everything with which he did it was so great that afterwards when he came and rolled on the ground there, just because he's a mongoose, you know, half his body turned gold, the side that he rolled. You know, so then after that he's gone to everywhere else trying to get the other side gold, you know, like that. And he says no, that was a great sacrifice. So it's, you know, his point was it's about mood, not about what you have, the facilities, like that. Yeah, that would be weird, right? Like one half of your body is like extremely beautiful, and the other half is just kind of ordinary.
Hairy.
Huh?
Hairy. Full of hairs.
Yeah, hair, whatever, hairs or something like that. Or one side's good hair, one side's, you know, one side's very nice, and the other side looks like, you know, that, you know. You know, it'd be wild. You know, so whatever happened to make the one side, you'd be always trying to get, you know, figure out how to get the other.
But I haven't heard mongoose auspicious, actually.
Mongoose, yeah, they're auspicious. Like that. Yeah, seeing them is auspicious. They're very auspicious. Okay. To elevate yourself to liberation, you have to do naishkarmya. Right? Meditation, there must be naishkarmya. Bhakti, there must be naishkarmya. So in other words, these inherent principles are worked into everything, that you're actually following the right principles, but the problem is wrong mentality. Right? Or as we see, as it goes down, you're following less of the right principles. Like nyaya, you're following the logical system very nicely. Everything else is left out. Mm. Yeah. Right? But still, to follow it, you still have to practice naishkarma. You have to have a guru. You have to base it on scripture. Right? There must be sadhana. There must be lifestyle. Does that make sense? Mm. So all these different things are there, but it's just less complete. Mm. Right? So this is more complete, but it's still the mentality is wrong. Right? Does that make sense? Like when we're talking about, let's say I have a gross materialist, he's doing something, he's in the mode of passion, so he's working very hard. But the one who's successful, at the moment when he's working, he's doing without the desire for the... I mean, he's not attached to the result that moment, he's attached to doing it properly. Right? So he's dutiful. So he's functioning in the mode of goodness. That's why he's successful. Right? So actually the point is being in the mode of goodness, that's what causes success. But, you know, whether businessmen will buy that or not, that's another thing. But that's the actual point. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So karma mimamsa has to be performed for self-astuti. Once you get the result, then they try to enjoy it. That's where the mode of passion comes. Right? So your divine passion is that the end, it's for yourself. Because the mechanics of applying the activity in passion, applying the activity in goodness, the mechanics are the same. The difference is in goodness, you're doing it because you're supposed to, right? And in passion, you do it because you're supposed to, because you know you'll get the good results. The other, you're doing it, you're supposed to, because you're supposed to do it, right? And then the results are another thing. Does that make sense?
That's why many times second generation of a successful businessman just starts to go down.
Yeah, because then they're trying to enjoy, and they think they know all the techniques, so now it's just a matter of I do it and I enjoy. So they're not focusing on the present. Because they know you just do this and it works, and you leave that to the secretaries and everybody else to do, and then it doesn't work. Because the previous generation, they themselves would watch it. They, you know, in other words, the guys that are successful are not too big to do the practical. Well, the guys that are less successful or not are generally too big to be practical. Okay. The first systematic work on this school of Vedic thought is the Mimamsa Sutra of Jaimini, which is divided into 12 chapters. Sabada Swami wrote a major commentary on the Mimamsa Sutra. Many other commentaries and independent works on this philosophy exist. Kumarila Bhatta and Prabhakar, the revivalist of the system in post-Buddhist India, founded two branches of Karma Mimamsa. The major teachings of these branches are the same. Kumarila Bhatta, is he the one that wrote the... Who's the one that wrote the things called Bhashya? Was that him? Or that was the connection with Nyaya? Shankya. There was something, it's just, you just say Bhashya, it means that. Everything else you have to say, what Bhashya? Bhashya means commentary. Yeah, so it's just, if you just say commentary, it means that particular. So it wasn't him. Okay. So here are the major elements. Sambandha. Karma Mimamsa does not admit the existence of God as the creator and destroyer of the universe. The universe is eternal without beginning and end. As in Nyaya Vaisheshika, the soul is eternal spiritual substance. Consciousness is not intrinsic to the soul. Right? In Abhideya, the method for attaining the ultimate goal is performance of prescribed duties, right, as given by the Veda. And Prayojana, the ultimate. It's like the sultanate or something. Ultimate goal of life. According to karma mimamsa is the attainment of heaven, or a state in which there is unalloyed bliss. The mimamsakas aspire after conscious, active, happy life, enjoying all the values which the universe can offer.
So right?
No, because he uses the means. This is what their goal is. Now, this goal, everybody will buy that. You know, if we auction this last sentence here, I think everybody would buy it. Yes.
Every day is problematic. Then Every day is problematic.
Well, no, because what defines it is his method for getting this. Because, yeah, it means Rajneesh would have that thing. They're mixed. You know, so he's using yoga for its fruit of benefits rather than for its actual point of you know, renunciation and stuff like that. So, yeah. So then that's the point, is that each one of these is in its pure state. You know, then you have followers who take something from here, something from there, and come up with it. So the idea, if you know the six, then you can understand the breakdowns of that. You know, that's the, you know, this next study, the Tattva Vivek, then that has in it all the different breakdowns. Right? Yes.
So they aspire for kind of an artificial state of being. It says that consciousness is not intrinsic to the soul.
Yeah, that's what's interesting, but they want to be conscious, yeah, active, happy, and all that. Yeah. So that's, I guess it's, they're not really worried about whether they're soul or not, as long as everything's going good, you know. Yeah. It's going my way, then they're quite happy.
Yeah.
Right? They accept the demigods as the supreme controller?
No. He said it's human-centered. So the demigods are the ones who manage the universe, but if I do the yajna, they have to give the result. So I'm in control of the demigods like that.
But they'd have problems with quite a few verses in the Veda, won't they? I mean, you say they accept all of them, but...
They'll have their interpretation.
Why?
They'll have their interpretation.
Yeah.
It means that, yes, Indra is the supreme of the demigods, but the point is if I do the Indra Yajna, he has to give me the results. So he can be the supreme of the universe. Who cares? As long as I am conscious, active, happy, enjoying all the values what the universe can offer. As long as Indra gives me everything I deserve, you know, hey, supreme.
They happily coexist.
Yeah, of course. It means that's what will come up, I think, in here, is that you have this cycle. The karma then defines that, is that you have the yajna is performed, and then you offer the oblations that goes to the sun. The sun then shines on the ocean, right? It sucks up water, right? And then from the water, then the rain comes, right? So you perform the yajna, you go to the heavenly planets. Right. Okay. And then the rain comes. Then the rain then produces grain. And from grain you eat it. Then there's semen. And then semen is injected into the womb. Right. Then the person is born. And then he takes up again the yajna. So you go to the heavenly planets. And when your time's done, you fall in the rain. That's how you get souls in the grain. You know what I'm saying? So that cycle, they understand that's there. So I'll be here. I'll do yajna. And I'll enjoy the facilities here, and then when that life's finished, I'll go to the heavenly planets, I'll enjoy there. So I'll always be in this state of conscious, active, happy, enjoying all the values. That's at least how, what they think. It doesn't seem to always work, but, you know.
Maharaj, this mentioning of grains.
Yeah.
When we know that when someone cooks grains, the consciousness goes into that. Is there a connection to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you get their karma that way. But the point is there's also, you have the grains as living entities there, so then that goes into the semen. But then the consciousness that you get. Does that make sense?
There's two things.
I would say it's two things. The person cooking it, it's not that he, you know, it affects the consciousness of the living entity in the grain, you know. Maybe it does, but I mean, I haven't come across.
Because there's a great point of not eating something cooked by.
Because of the consciousness, the karma and the consciousness. See, it's the two of them come with it: the karma of the person and the consciousness. If it's for free, If you pay for it, then you don't get the karma, but you get the consciousness. Like that. I remember once there's somebody had cooked something, you know, devotees like that. And then afterwards, when I was going to wash my hands, this music started coming into my head. And I was thinking, that's weird. I never think about that music. And then I went back and asked somebody, does the cook like this music? They said, oh, yeah, they're really into that music. So, yeah, yeah.
You immediately paid.
Yeah, yeah.
You immediately went and paid.
Okay, so then tomorrow we'll get into this. Oh, maybe not tomorrow. I think tomorrow we won't have this class. Well, the morning and evening, we won't have this one.
No middle class. She had some plans, so now it's okay.
Okay, that's nice. Okay, that's good. Worked out. Oh, tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh.
Today's 24th? Oh, okay. So that's Christmas Eve. So depending upon whether you're more from the European or from the...
Denmark, it's today.
Huh?
Denmark, it's today.
Most places, I think, Europe, it's today evening is more important.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, somehow or another, I'm not sure about England, but America, it's tomorrow morning is important.
Tomorrow you get the presents.
Yeah, tomorrow you get the presents.
We get them tonight.
You get them tonight, yeah. See, so
that's
better.
The deciding factor.
So the kids get up at 4 in the morning and go out there, you know, parents are still asleep.
Yeah, we kind of just gave up and said, okay, let them have it in the evening.
Yeah, that way you can sleep peacefully and like that. Otherwise you can sleep in on Christmas, you know. If it's going to be a holiday, then you might as well sleep in.
Yeah, that's the...
And if you're
studying,
you're at the beach.
Huh?
And if you're Australian, you're at the beach.
That's true, because so in other words, there in Australia, when they say I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, it means like the white waves and the white sands, or you know, how you say the white foam on the top of the drink. Or, yeah. Okay,
and Jews got before everybody, because Hanukkah is over like a long time before.
Oh yeah, yeah, a few days before. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they still have 8 days, right? Before they had 12, but now it's reduced down to 1, but they still have their 8 days. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got their thing, I guess. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaura Prema. Okay, so see, there is a God.